The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 11th of August, and you're very welcome along to the programme. It's a busy Tuesdays always are. Coming up later, we've got Community Garda information where we'll bring you the very latest appeals and information from Ungada Síochána. First, we're going to give you all the details you need to know about this deep partial solar eclipse a little later on. You might want to go out and see that, but how do you do so safely, etc. That and so much more besides. The lines are open for you right now to get involved in your programme. 086 60 25000. You can WhatsApp or text that number, whichever suits you best. You can also give us a call on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Feel free to watch the show if that suits you. Maybe you're off work, you work at home or in the home. We're on the YouTube app, so that means you can watch us on your smart telly. Just open the YouTube app and put in Highland Radio Ireland on your Fire Stick, your Google devices. We're across your mobile devices as well on Facebook and on X. Incredibly sad news to begin with, and we'll take it from the Irish Daily Star. All-Ireland winner James McHugh has been tragically killed in a road traffic collision. The star, who played for Donegal until 1996, died yesterday after the car in which he was travelling was in collision with a van in County Cavan. The crash between the car and a van took place on the N3 at Drumnala shortly before 2 p.m. yesterday. Mr. McHugh, who was in his 60s, was pronounced dead at the scene. His wife, Noreen, was then airlifted to Beaumont Hospital in a critical condition. And we'll be paying tribute to James a little later on in the programme. I wish we weren't. I wish this hadn't happened. And we are thinking on Martin and the whole family at this incredibly difficult time, and particularly at this time, sending all the love, prayers and strength to his beautiful wife, Noreen, who is seriously injured and receiving treatment in a hospital in Dublin. It's just the worst news any family could get, and we are keeping the McHughs and the wider Kilcar community as well too. We know all too well, don't we? You know, when you lose someone so important in your community, everybody is touched by it. Everyone is shocked by it. When that news would be coming through, you know, people wouldn't have been fit to believe it. But unfortunately, we're having to come to terms with it today. So, as I say, terribly sad news, and our thoughts and our prayers are with all of the McHugh family. On to the Irish Independent this morning, and petrol and diesel prices at the pumps have soared, as you would have noticed in the last month, as further uncertainty looms between the US and Iran. Diesel prices were up by 19 cents this month, with the price per litre coming close to the psychologically important €2 mark. Now, it's funny in Donegal here, because you can get diesel marked up at 196, 197 a litre, and in other places it's in the 80s. Often it seems to be the further from the border you are, the higher the price. I'm not suggesting that's the case, but often it can look like that. Petrol prices, they're up 9% this month when compared with July, according to the latest AA Ireland fuel price survey. The price rises come on the back of the most recent missile attacks between the US and Iran. Talks on the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz appear to have stalled, with US President Donald Trump telling Axios, "We are only semi-negotiating with them. It will work out. It always works out. It's like a chess game." It's a chess game, though, that I would suggest America is down to like a bishop and a queen, and Iran seems to have all its pieces, because they have control of the Strait of Hormuz, and they are not giving up their ambitions to create a nuclear weapon. And Donald Trump is probably going to have to accept that now they have full control of the Strait of Hormuz and still will continue to develop nuclear weapons. He has got no out in that war. So I don't know what's going to happen, but we have to feel the strain of that. Absolutely reckless to restore-esque excise duty on fuels, a fuels group did say. But the government does have headroom. It's in the same paper, but it's on page two, because it's like everything, you know. When we are paying the most, you would think it's because the government is losing out on tax, or the oil companies are losing out on profits. What we've learned is that the oil companies are making record profits, and the soaring energy prices are leading to huge VAT windfalls for the government. They've got 1.67 billion euro of your cash effectively in their pockets. The government is expected to rake in 1.67 billion in VAT on fuel this year amid rising energy prices caused by the war in Iran. VAT charged on electricity, gas, petrol and diesel is expected to be 2.38 million higher this year due to the worsening energy crisis. The price of crude oil climbed on Monday as Iran and the critical Strait of Hormuz waterway would not reopen. They said that without significant concessions from the US, stoking market anxiety. And it's very, very quick how quickly those prices go up. And the government is making a fortune because they charge VAT on the total, not just on a section of that. The Irish Daily Mail, the Garda watchdog is investigating if officers were told not to engage with a stolen car with eight teenagers inside it as the vehicle drove the wrong way down the M50, sources say. The newspaper understands that the stolen car, which had been sighted around the capital prior to crashing, failed to stop for Gardaí before the horror collision in the early hours of Sunday morning. An innocent man who was smashed into by the joyriding teen suffered life-changing injuries in the two-car crash, the Mail has learned. The collision occurred after the stolen car drove the wrong way down the motorway at 5:30 a.m. on Sunday at Junction 12 at Firhouse. Garda watchdog Firhouse is carrying out its own investigation into the actions of two young officers who were working on Sunday morning. And the bottom line is I'm not saying anything did or didn't happen, but if the Garda have interacted with the vehicle, then that causes the Garda Ombudsman, as they used to be called, to investigate. So we'll see. We'll see what comes from that. Interesting, because there's an awful lot of talk about those who are immigrants and living and working in Ireland and what their lives are like. So say, for instance, in Letterkenny University Hospital, almost half of the staff there would be from outside of the country. They're working here on work visas and what have you. Well, what is their life like? What do they have to put up with? We don't really know, if the truth be told, but HSE workers from immigrant backgrounds are reluctant to report racist abuse because managers sometimes take ineffective action or none at all, an internal assessment is found. Now, I just want to point out at this point that I was just using the hospital as an example. This story is not about the hospital or the reluctance of immigrant staff or staff with immigrant backgrounds to report in that specific venue. I was just giving that as an example of a big employer. A document said discriminatory behaviours against non-white staff were prevalent. It said ethics diversity was increasing rapidly across most clinical services in the HSE, but not all managers had experience of dealing with issues around race. An assessment said staff report reluctance to report racist incidents and near misses as management action sometimes is ineffective or non-existent. The document said there was a lack of support for staff from overseas outside the workplace. Man, we don't get reports of that, but I suppose if there is that concern that you can't report it wherever you might work, so I need to be clear about that. You're not going to hear about it, are you? And finally, stargazers should expect mostly dry weather when a solar eclipse blocks the sun this week. The phenomenon, when the moon will pass in front of the sun, is expected tomorrow. It's expected that more than 90% of the sun will be blocked by the moon, the highest percentage since 1999. So what does it look like for us here in Donegal? So I thought it was today, but it's actually tomorrow. So I don't know if we're going to look forward to it today or tomorrow. But so the partial eclipse begins tomorrow evening between 6:10 and 6:12. The reason I'm reading this out to you is everyone's talking about it, but no one's telling me when it is. So I thought, right, I'm going to find out when it is and then let people know. So the moon then will begin to encroach on the sun just after 10 past six. The maximum eclipse is between 10 past seven and 7:13. So 92 to 93% of the sun will be obscured over Donegal. And then the eclipse ends as the moon passes between us and the sun, around about 8:05. So, because over 90% of the sun will be blocked at peak, expect a dramatic eerie dimming, similar to dusk or an early sunset, along with a noticeable drop in temperature. The sun will sit low in the west-southwest sky, coastal spots along our Wild Atlantic Way or high ground with an unobstructed view to the west-southwest will offer the clearest sightline. What's the chances of clouds? Well, there's a 40% chance of clear Atlantic skies on average. Now, you only need a wee gap to see what we're going to be able to see. Now, just remember, this is a partial eclipse, so you cannot look at the sun with your naked eye. You must use glasses to do so to make sure that you don't damage your eye. It's with great shock and sadness that we learned last evening of the passing of former Donegal GEA forward James McHugh. He died after a collision between a car and a van on the N3 at Drumalla between Virginia and Cavan shortly before 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Councillor Anthony Molloy, Cahirlach of Glenties Municipal District and captain of the 1992 All-Ireland team joins us now. And I'm sorry to be speaking to you, Anthony, in this context, someone so important in your life, you know, both inside the game and outside the game.
Yeah, good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. Yeah, I suppose, first of all, our deepest sympathies go to James's family and his wife, Noreen, son Owen, and daughter Emma, and husband, his wider family, and everyone in Kildare and Donegal and outside who knew and loved James. I'm English, you know, and it's just very hard to find words to say this morning, Greg, and we are just in total shock and disbelief as we learned of James's death yesterday. A man I played with, played against and worked with in the ESB for many, many years, and also a selector with me with the county minor teams in the mid-90s. And James was just a wonderful chap, a wonderful footballer, skillful, you know, and very, very proud man to wear the Donegal jersey, Greg.
And we've seen sort of with the Mayo win this year where the whole country outside of Kerry perhaps sort of, you know, felt like it was a more relatable win. And we kind of did that in 92, didn't we? And James would be very familiar to the GAA world outside of Donegal, not least, I think, because that victory was so emotional and so special.
Exactly, like, you know, Mayo's one really was a replica of our one in 1992, and I was very privileged to be there, like, and just to witness that there. And I suppose talking about, you know, what I will remember most about James, you know, as the man behind the football, he's a great character, and he was a loyal teammate and an out-and-out gentleman, you know. And as you said, like, there's a special bond among that group of players of 92, and James was a very important part of that. And as a teammate in 92, I was privileged to share with him one of the most important and unforgettable journeys in Donegal. And, you know, we went through the highs and the lows together, and we fought together, and ultimately, you know, we reached the pinnacle. And a couple of weeks ago, like, Mayo witnessed that as well.
Yeah, for sure. He collected an All-Star in 92. I think he scored a point in that final, and he'd made his debut 2 years before and won Ulster the year following, and then in 92 as well. So he was really part of that squad that built to that glory.
He was indeed, and played a very integral part, and a great forward, a very gifted forward, a skillful forward, and he was a great reader of the game as well. Like, and for a small man, like, he created a lot of damage to the opposition, and most opposition will tell you that James McHugh had to be watched, you know. And he was just a great player, and I suppose with that as well, James is also, you know, he's also a great family man, and himself and his wife Noreen are very, very, very close. And well, you've seen one, you've seen two, and immensely proud of Owen, son, and Emma as well. And, you know, James had a great sense of humour, Greg, and always great company to be with, you know, and he was a great man to tell stories, and he had a great memory, you know.
Yeah, of course. And you know, obviously, I mentioned his importance on an inter-county level, but like so many players, before, during and after, it's all about the club. And You know, he was an integral part of course, Kilcar. But what that means is you know, the entire community is feeling this morning, Anthony.
Ah, exactly. And not alone Donegal, but outside Donegal as well. Yeah. Greg and James was very, very well known, like, outside his native county here. You know, I suppose, as you said, he played a very integral part as well in Kilcar's success, you know, and their championship victories and that there. He was a very, very hard player to market at club level, you know, as well. And his input into them ones were huge as well, you know.
All right, okay. Listen, yeah. Thanks for helping us
to pay tribute. You know,
I wish we weren't having to, but you know yourself.
I know. And I suppose before we finish, Greg, I would just like to thank James, you know, for the memories. Hard about this afterwards, but the laughter and the battles and, you know, for being part of a chapter in my life and all our lives that, you know, no one of us will forget. And I suppose when I think back to 1982, I don't see the cup or the celebrations these days. I just see the faces, you know, the men, you know, they shared that journey with me. And James will always be one of those faces.
It's a family. It's a family, isn't it? And there's a bond there.
Yeah.
Anthony,
yeah.
Again, personal condolences to you and James's family and the wider community. Thank you so much indeed. As I say, I wish we hadn't had to call you this morning. Mary Coughlan is the chairperson of the Donegal GEA board. Mary, thank you for joining us. And like Anthony, because we're a small, tight-knit community, even though we're a vast county, people are going to know James through the GEA, but also having a personal relationship there too.
Well, look, at people in Donegal are heartbroken news that came through yesterday evening. And, you know, I've known James all my life. He was a modest man. He was a family man, first and foremost, a Kilcar man and a Donegal man. And a great colleague, because I would be very friendly with people that worked with him as well in the ESB. So it's just a personal tragedy for the family, for the McHugh family, for the Kilcar GAA and the people in the community and the people of Donegal. I think this is the first of the 1992 team that have passed away. So, you know, it resonates. Great difficulty for a lot of the lads that were on the team, because as teammates they've always kept in touch and have been great friends and colleagues over the years. And we also feel for Noreen and hope to God that Noreen is going to recover and recover well. And also Owen, whom you know is on our panel, and his sister. So it's a very difficult time for them. And then, you know, the McHughs have been synonymous with Donegal GAA, with Martin and James, and then the next generation, you know, so, and I'm sure there's a new generation there too, and they'll continue in that ilk of being very much part of the GAA family. And I suppose very proud of the fact that this year they celebrated the Comórtas Pell na Gaeltachta, which was a fantastic GAA and community event. And I just listened back on James's interview on RTE, where he was very proud of the fact that the club was hosting the Comórtas. And as we all know, it was a very, very successful occasion for them. So on behalf of Donegal GAA and the GAA community, we just want to extend our heartfelt sympathies to the family. And as I said, we pray and hope now that Noreen will come to a full recovery and that the support will be there for the family to continue.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That's Mary Coughlan there, chairperson of the Donegal GEA County Board. And we heard before that from Councillor Anthony Molloy, Cathaoirleach of Glenties Municipal District, but of course the captain of that 1992 All-Ireland winning team. And as we heard from Mary Coughlan there, James, the first of that team to pass, but way too soon, early 60s, such a young man with so much to offer. And again, all we can do at this point is offer our deepest condolences to James's family and the Kilcar community, the wider GAA community, of course, of which we're all a part in one form or other. And we also join in wishing his beautiful wife, who he thought so much of, and she thought so much of him, a full and speedy recovery as she, Noreen, continues her recovery in Beaumont Hospital in Dublin. It's a busy road that many of us often use, so I will mention that Gardaí are appealing for information from anyone who may have witnessed the collision or who was travelling on the N3 between Virginia and Cavan, particularly between 1pm and 2pm, to come forward. As is the case, Gardaí are particularly appealing to motorists who may have dash cam or other camera footage of the area during this time and to make that footage available to investigating Gardaí. That information can be passed on to the Bailey Borough Garda Station, but you know what? Any Garda Station would do. But it's just on the off chance that other vehicles from other people from this region may have been in that area at that time. Right, now we're joined on the programme by Fianna Fáil Deputy Malcolm Byrne, and we're talking about this smoke-free generation bill. Good morning, Deputy.
Good morning to you and good morning to your listeners.
Right, so what would this look like, Malcolm?
So the bill that I'm proposing, which the government is considering, will mean that from anybody who was born after the 1st of January 2009 would no longer be able to purchase tobacco or nicotine products, including nicotine inhaling devices or vapes. So the reason behind this is, and if you talk to any doctor or any medical organisation, they will continue to say that our greatest public health challenge relates to tobacco. We know that in Ireland, over 4,500 deaths every year are as a result of tobacco or nicotine use. And there's about 1,000 hospitalisations nationally every week relating to tobacco use. So that's about the impact on people's lungs, on their hearts, through cancer and so on. So it is putting and continues to put an enormous strain on our health service. And even though there are, you know, quite a number of initiatives that have been taken, we have only seen, you know, tobacco use in Ireland, it's kind of plateaued. But a big concern has to be at the rise in vaping, particularly vaping among young people and many young people who are starting to vape never even smoked in the first place. So we know the tobacco companies that own most of these vaping companies, they're deliberately marketing these products at young people to try to get them hooked.
For sure, and we really, really don't want to see that. But the reality is, you know, cocaine, heroin, for an example, is completely illegal now. Unfortunately, people do find they do find it and use it, and we do have schemes whereby, you know, we have risk aversion, where we would give them methadone or what have you. Is it not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, banning, say, for instance, something like vaping, that we should have it there so that, you know, if people do become addicted to cigarettes, for an example, off the black market, you know, that we would have some sort of a system there to be able to support them or wean them off?
Well, if it is, as some of the, you know, the vaping companies claim, that these nicotine inhaling devices, which we got to remember are not safe, if they do claim that it is to help people with cessation of smoking, and I totally accept that it does, then let's have them available on prescription, like any you know, medical product. So when you talk about you know, those who are addicted to you know, a drug like heroin, and they're placed onto morphine, that's on the basis of medical advice, and they provide those supports. So look, I totally get how difficult it is for somebody who is addicted to get them off, but they do need medical support in that regard. What we have here is a drug that causes far more deaths every year than any of those drugs that you've mentioned, and that it's freely available. And I think that once we start to look at restricting the sale of that, it will make it you know, less available. It will mean that it'll, over time, you'll have a tobacco-free generation. It'll be socially unacceptable if you like to smoke or vape in public. You're never going to totally get rid of it. I totally accept that. We know we already have a black market for cigarettes and indeed some vaping products at present. You know, that's a matter for Customs and the Gardaí to address that. But I think as a society, we have to ask a question: are we going to continue to accept a situation whereby 4,500 people die in Ireland every year as a result of tobacco-related illnesses.
Yeah.
And we know that the greatest threats to our heart and to our lungs continues to be through tobacco. I think if you talk to any smoker who has given up smoking, you know, they generally tend to regret it ever starting in the first place. And we've got to look at, you know, for future generations, for young people, how do we protect them against, you know, lung disease, heart disease and cancers, which are caused significantly by smoking.
Yeah, and this is the point really where I should continue to push back against you. But the truth is that the way you are introducing this, anyone currently who smokes, whether we like it or not, would be able to continue to do so. So you're not encroaching on their rights. You know, anyone who vapes at the moment of a certain age, because they probably have to, would still be able to do so theoretically. And the greatest opposition you might have to this is from big tobacco companies who were very clever in seeing what was coming down the line and buying up the vape companies as well. So if this stops any young person ever getting stuck on nicotine, be it through cigarettes or through vaping, you know, if it's only that a big tobacco really that would be pushing against that, because who in their right mind would want young people to begin this awful habit? It's a good idea.
Well, we know, I mean, if it is a tobacco cessation or nicotine cessation product, as some of these tobacco companies would argue, why is there the need for all the fancy packaging? Why is there a need for, you know, all these flavoured vapes? I mean, and I'm sure as your listeners know, if you walk into you know, any retail store in Letterkenny or Dunloe or in Bundoran, and you see on the shelves some of these products, they're marketed in the same way almost the sweets are being marketed. So we are moving to obviously restrict some of the fancy packaging, some of the flavored vapes, and so on. But what this legislation will do will be to provide that future generations won't be in a position to be able to buy this product. It's not going to affect somebody who's in their 40s or 50s or 60s who's smoking. But I think even if, as you say, if you talk to those older people, they'll say that if they could have, you know, avoided starting, they would have. Mm-hmm. And certainly if they want to protect young people into the future, I think it's a very sensible move.
And finally, the elephant in the room is always the same for us up here. You know, if you're in Galway, you're in Cork, you're in Kerry, you're not going to be heading towards Northern Ireland to do whatever you want to do. Same with minimum unit pricing on alcohol and all that type of stuff. The bottom line is that we live on the border. There are people listening to this programme now who live in the Republic, but their nearest shop is in Strabane or Belique or wherever it might be. You know, what are you going to do to ensure that the health and well-being of young people is equally valued in Donegal as it is in Dublin?
Well, I suppose the good news is that the UK government is also considering this measure, and it does make sense that you know, if measures are to be introduced in the north, that, you know, on a north south basis in when it comes to public health, that the policies are aligned. I would love to see a situation, and I think we will see it quite soon, whereby we will move toward this tobacco-free generation on both sides of the border. And I think any cooperation in public health measures will be critical. We know not just the impact that, you know, tobacco and nicotine products have on individuals, but the impact in terms of on the costs and the strains that that they're already putting on our health service are considerable. And I think if we can take these long-term measures, bear in mind that over 20 years ago, you know, the tobacco companies opposed when Micheál Martin, then as health minister, introduced the smoking ban in the workplace. That has led to much healthier workplaces and has saved lives. And I think we need to take a similar radical step now in Ireland to be able to protect young people from becoming addicted. Mm. And obviously in the long term, you know, to prevent those deaths that we've been talking about.
Yeah, because whilst we have one of the lowest rates of smoking in Europe, we are actually seeing an increase in people smoking. So, OK, we'll see how that progresses. Deputy Malcolm Byrne of Fianna Fáil, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you too. What do you think about that? So in a nutshell, the proposals there would be through his bill, if it were to go through all the steps that it needed to. It would ban the sale of tobacco or nicotine products to anyone born after the 1st of January 2009. So that is, what, 17. So in other words, all of you who smoke or vape would still be able to do so if that was your will. It just means that, you know, no one born after that date would be able to get addicted to vapes or tobacco by buying them legally. As I say, someone who smoked for a long time, and Mr. Byrne phrased it correctly, you know, you only smoke a cigarette to really alleviate the need to smoke one, and then that fades, and then you go again, and it's a horrible thing to get involved in, and it's very hard to stop. Is there anyone that would oppose that, or do you think this is a great idea? As I say, I can speak as a former smoker. I think it is a good idea. It feels like a good idea. I got this contact from a listener. I'm hoping you might consider highlighting an issue that I feel is affecting a lot of carers in Donegal but doesn't get talked about enough. I'm a woman in my 30s and I'm currently caring for a family member while receiving carer's allowance. Under the rules, I can work a maximum of 18 and a half hours a week, but I'm finding it incredibly difficult to find employers in the Donegal area who offer enough hours to make working worthwhile while staying within that limit. I don't want to give up my caring responsibilities, and I'm not asking for a full-time job. I just want a little part-time job that would give me some independence, some confidence, routine, and a sense that I'm doing something for myself too, as well as caring. It can feel like my life is on hold. I want to work, I want to contribute, and I want to have a bit of financial independence, but the lack of suitable jobs for people restricted to 18.5 hours makes that incredibly difficult. There are plenty of jobs advertised as part-time, but when you look closer, many require 20, 25 or even 30-plus hours. The few jobs that do fit within the 18.5-hour limit can be extremely difficult to find, especially in a small area like Donegal, a smaller area. I know I can't be the only carer experiencing this. There are people who genuinely want to work but are caught in a gap where they're expected to remain within a very specific number of hours while employers aren't offering jobs that fit those hours. Do you know what would be very interesting here is if employers, there's possibly employers that don't realise this is the situation, and if they were struggling to fill positions, maybe actually targeted at 18 hours a week. Because maybe they're thinking, well, that's not enough part-time hours for someone. And then you've got carers saying, well, I'd love to work 18 and a half hours a week. So maybe, you know, employers who are looking to fill positions might take heed of this and say, right, well, maybe we can adapt how we advertise our jobs. But anyway, the caller goes on to say, I would appreciate if Highland Radio could look into this and perhaps speak to other carers in Donegal about their experiences. I don't want sympathy. Of course you don't. I just want the opportunity to work a few hours, earn some of my own money, and feel like I have a life outside of being a carer. Thank you for taking the time to read this. And thank you very much for sending it in. So, this lady is a carer. And is sort of caught in between how many hours they can work and jobs, really. So, this carer, able to work 18.5 hours a week and retain that carer's allowance. But a lot of the part-time work that's out there is 20, 25, 30 hours, which is still classed as part-time, of course. Firstly, let's have this conversation because this caller feels alone in that, you know, it's not an issue being talked about, but is sure that there are other people that are in the same boat. So, if you're one of these people and want to help us highlight it and get the message out there, start a conversation, maybe start changing things. You can WhatsApp or text 086 60 25,000, or give us a call either on 07491 25,000, or maybe you're an employer who's struggling to fill those part-time roles and didn't realise that maybe there's a whole group of people out there who are very dedicated to their role as a carer but also want to work but can't work more than 18.5 hours a week. Is there something there to talk about? Let me know. I've given you the numbers there. Get in contact.
On air, online, and on your smart speaker. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Right, now, tomorrow evening, around about 6 p.m. We're going to see something very rare, or at least something that we're not going to see for quite some time. David Moore is editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine, and he's with me now. Good morning to you. David, are you there? No, we don't have David. He's had a total eclipse of the phone. Are you there, David?
I am indeed.
Hi, it's Greg here. Now, thanks so much for joining us. Very exciting, isn't it, as we head towards tomorrow evening?
Absolutely, yeah. The deepest eclipse we've had since 1999 and the deepest we're going to have until 2090. But it's not the only one. There'll be 30 other eclipses between now and then. Another one in 12 months' time, another one 6 months after that.
Right, so shortly after six, around about 10 past six up here in the northwest, we'll start to see the moon appear to encroach on the sun. And then over the course of the next hour, what happens?
Yep, that's right. The eclipse will get deeper and deeper, as you said, until just around 7 o'clock it'll be at its maximum. So it depends a little bit where you are in the country. 94% is the worst in the northeast, but 98% down in the southwest. So most of us will see about 96% of the sun covered. There'll only be a few percent left, but it's still dangerous to look at the sun, even when it's almost totally eclipsed. You do need the eclipse glasses or the special trick projecting with a little pinhole camera.
Yeah, so regular sunglasses, you do not want to be looking at the sun with them on, I presume.
No, they're not safe, even several stacked together, because they don't get rid of all of the infrared and all of the ultraviolet that are dangerous to your eyes. So these Astronomy Ireland sells eclipse glasses. It's too late to get them posted now. They were available last week. You can still get them if you're in the Dublin area by dropping in. And you'll, with those, they are EU certified as safe.
I'm speaking to you from the West Coast. Does that give us an advantage? How I presume at this time of the evening, or that time of the evening, the sun will be lower. So does that give the West Coast a bit of an advantage in terms of not necessarily having to climb the nearest mountain? I exaggerate, but you know where I'm coming from.
A tiny bit, a few degrees. But what's going to be more significant in Ireland is the cloud cover. You know, it's mostly cloudy in Ireland. The forecast doesn't look too bad. But I'm telling people, go to met.ie, Met Éireann, and look at the satellite pictures. You'll see where the clouds are. Mm. And maybe you might want to drive for a while to try and find a clear patch for such a deep eclipse. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay, yeah. And I suppose, too, people are looking to do something for the summer. It'd be a nice little memory as the children head back to school. How dark might it get? Because whilst in some, say, 96% coverage of the sun, it still is incredibly powerful. So we shouldn't be expecting nighttime conditions, I presume.
No, you'll only get day turning to night at a total eclipse of the sun. And there hasn't been one of those in 1724 on Irish soil. And there won't be one on Irish soil till 2090. So they're very rare. A lot of people are going to Spain where there will be a total eclipse, but not this time from Ireland, unfortunately. So we're just going to get what look like twilight. You know, if there's a beautiful blue sky, you'd be wondering why it wasn't bright on the ground as it normally is. And that's because most of the sun is covered. But the temperature should drop. This happened in 1999. One of our readers wrote into the magazine and said he recorded a temperature drop of 10 degrees Celsius. So imagine a nice warm 20 degrees Celsius summer's day dropping down to 10 Celsius. That's a winter's day.
I think really what it does for me is it really underlines the impact the sun has on us. Do you know what I mean? Because we expect the sun to go down in the evening and we know night. But when you see the sun being obscured and it having that kind of an impact, it just goes to show the power of it. Okay, if people want any more information, where can they check out Astronomy Ireland, David?
If you go to it. Yeah, if you go to astronomy.ie, you'll see we have a bit about eclipse glass and the eclipse there. We're actually going to update it tomorrow on the day, so it gives a bit more information. But if you join Astronomy Ireland, you're instantly emailed the eclipse articles, and the paper magazine will arrive a few days later. You'll see that on astronomy.ie as well. And don't forget, there's a lunar eclipse later this month. There's a shooting star shower Wednesday night as well. another eclipse next year, and 6 months after that, so there's loads happening. So if you've got €1 a week to spare, is what I tell people, sign up for the magazine and we won't let you miss a thing.
It's all go up there. Thanks very much, David Moore, editor of the Astronomy Ireland magazine. And hey, you know, as I said earlier on, if there is even a break in the clouds, or maybe there won't be any clouds, we'll get a good view. Morning, Greg. We're very sorry to hear on the passing of James McHugh. May he rest in peace. Our thoughts and prayers are with the family from all at the Ulster and Donegal community games. And that's what happens with us, isn't it? It's our community as a whole, and it's the sporting communities, and there is that solidarity. We were talking yesterday, sorry, just on the issue of the eclipse. Hi, Greg. Just wondering where in Donegal can you get the solar eclipse on Wednesday? Love your show. Thank you for that. Well, as I mentioned there, it's all over the shop. So the sun's so far away, wherever you are in Donegal, it all depends on the weather too. On Daniel Kinahan, why had the government jet to take this man back to Ireland? What an insult to the families of people who've had their lives ruined by this criminal gang. Couldn't imagine any other country doing it. It's to control the situation is the reason why. It's not because, oh, there's a jet, have a cup of tea and all that. He would be for someone as high profile and high risk of him, there would be and his number two also got the same treatment. It's to control the situation. It's not to provide him any luxury whatsoever. On the issue of smoking, wanting someone to start a bad habit is one thing, but restricting people's choices under some self-righteous authority in the guise of saving lives is not acceptable. There are many things that have risks attached. This ideology will encroach on meat, sugar, alcohol, etc., etc. It's a slippery slope. Individuals have the right to accept risks. These means there are two different types of citizens, or two levels of citizenship. I fully get where you're coming from. But smoking is so bad. You know, there's just no need for anyone to start smoking. You know, if you eat meat or the other examples, sugar, or there's something in it for the user. But I mean, as I say, and I can say this as a smoker, but there's nothing in smoking other than smoking to stop you wanting a cigarette. You know, and I know people might say they smoke because of stress, but the truth is the nicotine actually elevates the stress and anxiety. Again, I am someone who knows this all too well. We were talking, received that contact from a carer, and others are messaging in, and it does take a while, so we'll get more in the second hour. Take your time. Being a full-time carer can work now without being means tested. There are plenty of care companies in Letterkenny who are looking for part-time carers to work in this area, i.e. the Donegal Centre for Independent Living are hiring. Thanks. I get where you're coming from, but this is a person who is a carer, and I'm not sure stepping into a part-time caring position is what they're looking for. But I understand. This carer says, the problem I have as an employer is everyone wants to work less hours as opposed to more hours, and it's driving me crazy. I go to the expense of hiring them, and there's no give in them at all, covering holidays or sick time. Hence, they benefit from me, but I get nothing extra for them, and it's just not worth the effort. Okay, I suppose that's the flip side, right? But is there a possibility of job sharing, create a permanent role and split it amongst two? But I'm sure, listen, if you're running a business, you know far more than I might. The HSC or an agency as a carer would be good for that lady who's a carer. If she was interested, as she's already doing that line of work, that's another person suggested this, she could pick her own shifts then. They're always trying to get new staff and can't. Okay, well, that's interesting. Maybe that listener is listening and might get back to us. I mean, have you considered caring is your part-time job, although you're also already very busy as a carer, and maybe I don't want to offend anyone, but maybe she wants to step out of that caring role and would feel more fulfilled in contributing in a different way, as she's already or he's already in a carer's role. I don't know, because it comes down to each individual there, of course, doesn't it? Greg, could you do a piece on the shooting of 50 cattle here in County Tyrone? The Department of Agriculture seem to be trying to cover the whole thing up, and I hope it goes away. I hadn't heard anything about this at all. How do you cover it? Is it a criminal matter? We'd have to look into that. I'm not sure what the ins and outs of it are. I hadn't heard about it at all. Maybe that's part of the cover-up, Noel, in inverted commas, but anyway. A caller says the RSA needs to be disbanded. They're useless and have no interest in road safety. All they focus on is speed, but do nothing about the terrible standards of drivers that are on our roads. When you see ads that say it's terrible to be drink driving, but it's okay to be driving impaired from lack of sleep, says it all, really. Yeah, I get the frustration, but I also get the nuances of that, the complication in getting that message out there. But they could do better. Their latest campaign, look left, look right again. I'm not sure, really. It's worth $18 million a year. Right, Deputy Michael Healy, Ray Independent, joins us now. Good morning to you, Deputy.
Good morning, Greg, and thank you very much for having me on Highland Radio.
Good stuff, and get your tickets. Right, now, you are saying that our tax system should be designed to encourage work and not discourage it. So does it discourage you? Because we have, you know, statistically, Michael, we have full employment. So really, the government might argue that the system is working.
No, what I'm proposing is an add-on onto the system that we have to try and make it better. What I'm in a sense saying is that if people are willing to work extra hours, they should keep more of what they earn. In other words, we must make work pay. So every person that's listening to Highland Radio today, whether you're working in a shop, whether you're working in a factory, whether you're a guard, a fireman, an ambulance technician, whoever you are, whatever you're doing today, you look at your overtime and you're thinking to yourself, I'm giving 50 or maybe more than 50% of that in tax. So my proposal is very straightforward. And the proposal is that tax qualifying overtime should be at the rate of 20%. Mm-hmm. So if you earn €100 extra in overtime, no problem, you'll give 20 of it in tax. Now, anybody could come along and make a statement like this, and you might think, oh, it's popular, and sure, who's going to disagree with that? But the only thing then is, what would it cost? So we have a very good facility, which is called the Parliamentary Budget Office, where we can use the Houses of the Oireachtas to independently do an analysis. Now, this is not a Mickey Mouse analysis. But there was an awful lot of time, research and work went into this. And there is a costing for it. And that costing has come in at $238 million for 2027 if Minister for Finance, the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, was kind enough to look at this, which I am going to sit down and talk to him about it and explain the merit of it, which I'm sure he would fully understand himself already. But having it independently given an analysis to tell us what it would cost is important. But very importantly, we call that the PBO, the Parliamentary Budget Office. But the PBO itself says that more attractive overtime could actually mean that more people working extra hours would reduce the net cost. So in other words, if it was to cost $238 million in the first year, it would actually cost less as we would progress. Because if you have more people doing more overtime, earning more money and giving 20%, it would actually reduce that net cost. And I think that's a very important
It'd be interesting
point.
To hear from employers. I wonder, are employers finding that workers are turning down the option of overtime? Because, you know, as you say, if you earn 100 quid, handing €50 to the state, you might go, do you know what? It's not worth those extra 6 or 7 hours or whatever your income might be. It's not worth it.
Well, can I give you an answer from an employer and not from a politician?
Yeah.
I'm only a small operator, but between plant hire and different things, I have people working with me all my life. And yes, I'll give you an example. Saturday. To me, a normal working week, any day of the week, would be a 6-day week. But building sites and all types of jobs like that and everything, you'd see very little maybe on a Saturday, quite simply because people don't want to work on Saturday because they're giving half it away in tax. So my proposal would help with labour shortages, it would improve productivity and take home pay. And I the mantra that I would have in this, Greg, is reward work, reward effort and make working more worthwhile. And I think we as a nation, obviously there are people who mightn't be able to work, which we understand because of illness, and we understand that 100%. We know that there are people who maybe have an aversion to work and who don't like working, and we have to admit that too. But as a nation, overall, I believe the majority of the people of Ireland are hardworking, decent, respectable people who would like to improve their lot. But when they find themselves doing that extra bit and doing the overtime and staying on late in the evening and coming in on Saturday or maybe even Sunday and all that, they find that half of what they're earning is going on tax. And I just think that's wrong.
How do
and
we ensure, though? Work. Yeah, how do we ensure, though? Because you know yourself, as soon as you change anything, people will look for a way around it. How do we know that, in a way, this will not harm things? In other words, it would encourage or incentivize a lower base pay, if you know what I mean.
No. That wouldn't happen, or I couldn't see it happening, because everybody knows what their earnings are. Everybody knows what their rate of pay is. And all I'm saying is that if they were able to see and to hear that government was coming out and saying, yes, in the 1.5 billion tax measures that are coming out in the budget, we are going to seriously look at putting 238 million of this towards a reduction in the tax take on overtime. I think it would be very welcome, like I say, by all of the people. You can go through all the different professions and all of the different people who are genuinely working away today and might stay on this evening or might stay on Saturday, or say, yes, we'll tackle that extra work, provided that we're paying tax at 20% rather than the excessive rates that are there at present.
Right, you're having your conversations with the powers that be. We'll see what the listeners think. It's an interesting one. I mean, then there will be people listening, though, who don't have access to overtime, and they'll argue that they feel that they don't get any breaks and that they're, you know, it is unfair that they're taking more responsibility for the payment of tax. But I suppose there's always going to be eggs cracked if you're making an
argument. Whatever good idea you will come up with, Greg, there'll always be people that will knock it.
I'm trying my best.
I put it to this way, Greg. If there was a bit of overtime going yourself, and if we thought you had to pay 20% rather than 50%, might be happy yourself.
I'll take your hand off for it. All right, then, listen, thanks very much indeed for that. Deputy Michael Healy-Ray, what do you think of those proposals? So what Deputy Healy-Ray is suggesting, and it's a pre-budget submission, which happens at this time of year, he wants to see the state allow people to keep more of their money if they work more. So if you worked overtime, so say your boss came to you and said that, listen, could you do an extra shift? You might go, well, it's not worth it because I'm going to effectively have to give half of that money to the state. But if you were to keep 80% of that, you might go, okay, let's have a piece of that action. It's costed as well. You heard from Michael Healy-Ray, about $250 million in 2027. But the idea being that could actually, that gap could narrow because obviously people would be more productive and paying more of the 20% rate, if you get where I'm coming from. What do you think? 086 60 25,000, would you go for that? And I would like all views, employers' views, and also those of you who couldn't access overtime. Do you think it would be unfair that you feel that you'd be taking more of the burden, or would you be happy to see others get on if they can? Just before the break, Michael and Teresa Crampsey in Letterkenny, they're celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary today. Best wishes from the Saturday Morning Tea Crew.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
It's time for Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 11th of August 2026. Our guest today is Garda Gerard McNamee from the Letterkenny Garda Station. Good morning, Gerard. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks.
Right, we've quite a few appeals as it relates to road traffic collisions that have occurred over the last number of days. We'll start in Termon, and Garda continue to investigate a fatal road traffic collision.
Yes, Greg. Garda, you're appealing for witnesses following a fatal road traffic collision that occurred on the N56 in Termon, County Donegal, at approximately 4:30 p.m. on Friday the 7th of August. The collision involved a car and a motorcycle. The motorcyclist, a man aged in his 60s, was pronounced deceased at the scene. The driver of the car, a woman aged in her 30s, was conveyed to Letterkenny University Hospital for treatment of non-serious injuries. Gardaí are appealing to anyone who may have witnessed this collision to come forward. Road users who were travelling on the N56 between the Lagoon Restaurant and Guesthouse and Creasley between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday the 7th of August, and who may have camera footage, including dash cam, are asked to make it available to investigating Gardaí. Anyone with information is asked to contact Milford Garda Station on 074 91 53060 or the Garda confidential line on 1800 666 111, or again at any Garda station.
Your colleagues in Ballyshannon investigating two collisions in the south of the county. We'll start in Ballyshannon.
Yes, so Gardaí are appealing for witnesses following a three-vehicle collision on the N3 at Cherrymount, Ballyshannon, at approximately 2:10pm on Saturday the 8th of August. A woman aged in her 20s was transported to Sligo University Hospital to receive treatment for injuries which are believed to be non-life-threatening in nature. A man in his 40s who was travelling in a separate vehicle was treated at the scene as a precaution. A woman in her 60s who was travelling in another vehicle was also treated at the scene as a precaution. Gardaí are appealing to any road users who may have dashcam footage from that area to make the footage available to investigate in Gardaí. Anyone with information is asked to contact Ballyshannon Garda Station on 071 985 8530, or again the Garda confidential line on 1800 666 111.
Now, yesterday there was a road traffic collision in the Lahey area.
Yes, so Gardaí are appealing for witnesses in connection with a two-vehicle road traffic collision that occurred on Monday, the 10th of August, at approximately 1:50pm at the Coxtown Lahey. The collision occurred between a motorcycle and a car. The motorcyclist was transferred to Sligo University Hospital to receive treatment for his injuries. No other injuries were reported. We appeal to any road users who may have dashcam footage from that area to make the footage available to investigate in Gardaí. Anyone with information is asked to contact Ballyshannon Garda Station on 071 985 8530, or again the Garda confidential line on 1800 666 111, or to any Garda station.
And finally, on the roads, Drumkeen on Sunday.
Yes, Greg. Gardaí are appealing for witnesses in connection with a single vehicle road traffic collision that occurred on the N13 at Trentaboy, Drumkeen, on the Letterkenny side of the filling station, in the early hours of Sunday, the 9th of August, at approximately 1:35am. A blue Subaru Impreza collided with a steel barrier at that time. Nobody was present at the scene upon the arrival of the Gardaí. There were extensive damage caused to the car. We appeal to anyone who may have travelled along that stretch of road between 1am and 2am with a dash cam to make that footage available to us. If anybody can assist with the relevant information, they are asked to contact Gardaí and Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530.
Now, moving on, we'll go to Letterkenny now, and investigations into an alleged assault in the early hours of yesterday morning.
Yes, Gardaí are investigating an alleged assault that occurred in the area of Lower Main Street, Letterkenny, shortly after 3am on Monday the 10th of August. A man is believed to have been assaulted by another man at that location, and he was taken to Letterkenny University Hospital to receive medical treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. We appeal to anyone who may have witnessed the incident to contact Gardaí in Letterkenny on 074 9167 100. And as always, Greg, we are appealing for any dashcam footage from that area.
Yeah, for sure. Now, a bizarre one, pointless, completely pointless, and this seems to be, and this relates to criminal damage at Bamba's Crown.
Yes, Greg, so Gardaí are appealing for witnesses in connection with an incident of criminal damage that occurred at Bamba's Crown, Mallon Head, on Saturday the 8th of August, between approximately 1:30pm and 2pm. A man set off for a climb and he passed the Memorial Cross at Bamba's Crown. But upon his return a short time later, he discovered that the Memorial Cross had been removed and thrown over the cliff onto the rocks. The man returned the following day to retrieve the cross and to return it to its rightful position. We appeal to anyone who may have been at the Bamba's Crown area on Saturday between those times and who may have witnessed the incident to make contact with Gardaí in Buncrana on 074 932 0540. There is believed to be a number of people in the area around that time of the incident, and so we are hopeful that someone may come forward and provide us with useful information, Greg.
Yeah, and it's not the crime of the century, but it's not insignificant either. And fair play to that fella for going and retrieving the cross and returning it, as you mentioned there, to its rightful position. Right, now we are focusing on thefts from vehicles. There is a trio of instances here that we wish to highlight. And we'll start with Long Lane.
Yes, Gardaí are investigating an incident of theft that occurred at Ungaran, Long Lane, Letterkenny between 10:30pm on Tuesday the 4th of August and 8pm on Wednesday the 5th of August. A car was stolen from a house in that area between those times. The car in question was a silver Honda Jazz with a partial registration of 03D54. The stolen car was then located at Banton on Saturday the 8th of August at 10am in the area of Glenard Park, Letterkenny. A number of windows have been smashed and damage caused to the ignition. We appeal to anyone who may have observed any suspicious activity in the area of Ungaran between August the 4th and 5th to get in touch with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 074-9167-100. And again, if anybody witnessed a vehicle being abandoned in the area of Glenard Park over the course of those dates between the 4th and 8th of August, we are asked them to contact Gardaí also and provide us with any relevant information. And again, Greg, people can contact the confidential line on 1800 666 111.
Yeah, and people will notice as we go through this a bit of a trend, and you will have seen it in the past during these appeals, where there seems to be certain cars that are particularly targeted, and they often are imports that don't have the security measures. So maybe after we get another couple of appeals, Jared, you might run us through some advice in that regard. But we're going to move on to our next appeal. This is the attempted theft of a vehicle in and around Letterkenny again.
Yes, Greg. So Gardaí are appealing for information in connection with an attempted theft of a car, a silver Toyota Fitz, from the car park at St Connell's Hospital, Letterkenny, on Wednesday the 5th of August between 8:45am and 5pm. The owner of the car returned to discover that the coiling had been ripped open and damage had been caused to the ignition barrel. We appeal to anybody who may have observed any suspicious activity in that area that day to get in touch with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 074-9167-100.
And another Vitz was targeted then on the Pierce Road, is that right?
Yes, Greg, that's correct. We are appealing to witnesses in connection with an attempted theft of a car, a silver Toyota Vitz, from the Pierce Road, Letterkenny, in the early hours of Friday the 7th of August between midnight and 11am. The driver's side window of the car had been smashed and damage was caused to the ignition. We appeal to anyone who may have observed any suspicious type of activity in that area on that date to get in touch with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 074-9167-100, and any relevant information may be passed alternatively onto the Garda confidential line again on 1800 666 111.
All right, okay, so before we get to some advice in relation to that, there are a couple of other instances as well, aren't there, between, you know, people accidentally leaving the keys in the car, or further targeting of ignitions, etc. So maybe a quick roundup on a few other instances there, Jared.
A couple of other related incidents occurred recently in the Letterkenny area on August the 7th, whereby the car owner left the keys in the car momentarily while it was left unattended, and it was subsequently stolen and then crashed. On August the 7th, in another area in Letterkenny town, a car was stolen and located then a short distance away. Damage had been caused to the driver's door and the ignition barrel was missing. These matters are currently under investigation, Greg.
Yeah, so what's obviously happening here is, and there's too much of a trend to ignore, that there are particular cars being targeted by particular individuals. It's clear that some vehicles have immobilizers or anti-theft systems and others don't. So what is the sort of general advice in terms of crime prevention for car owners, and particularly, I suppose, focusing on the vehicles we're talking of here, Jared?
Yes, Greg. So in light of the number of car theft-related incidents we've mentioned there this morning, many second-hand car imports do not have fully fitted car alarm systems, or they're fitted without immobilizers. This makes them extra valuable and vulnerable to hot wiring. We're appealing for witnesses in connection with the attempted theft again, which is, they're happening a lot, Greg, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean, I suppose car buyers and owners, we can take action ourselves, can't we? As you say, these aren't fitted,
but there are aftermarket options for us, Jared.
Yes, Greg. So cars imported from international markets are not automatically manufactured with the same security features as the cars manufactured for the European markets. We urge buyers and owners of the vehicles to confirm the security features of imported vehicles, especially to check if there is an inbuilt immobiliser and consider extra security options on their vehicles. Mm. Buyers should check the security features of the vehicles and make decisions relating to augmenting the security. For cars without an immobiliser, an additional steering wheel lock or a chain should be considered.
Yeah, and I'll tell you too, this is not necessarily for you or I to concern ourselves with, or maybe it is a God of matter too, but you know, when you are applying for insurance, there is a series of questions, you know, what security features, and you might say, yeah, it's got an immobiliser, yeah, it's got an alarm. You know, just be extra, extra careful, because you never know when it comes down to a claim what impact that might have. And I suppose whether you have one of these imports or not, there's kind of some general advice, isn't there, Jared, that we can all heed as motorists?
Yes, Greg. So the general vehicle security advice that Gardaí are providing is never leave your key in the car or the ignition, even for a short period of time. Lock your doors and fully close your windows. Make sure you have an alarm fitted to the vehicle. Retrofit an immobiliser or use a physical lock. Install a tracking device in the car as well. Use physical security features such as a steering wheel lock or a catalytic converter lock. Park with a CCTV and where possible in lit up areas. And always report suspicious activity you observe around parked cars immediately to Gardaí.
Yeah, indeed. And just take note, particularly you have one of those cars that seems to come up quite regularly in these items. And, you know, a lock on the... If these people are scanning vehicles, Jared, a lock on the steering wheel is incredibly visual, and it just means that they might move on to the next vehicle. Now, that sounds harsh, right? But, you know, it's all subjective. Okay, listen, so some great advice there, and unfortunate, some terrible losses for people that drive that advice home. Jared, thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
That's Garda Jared McNamee from the Letterkenny Garda Station. That was Community Garda Information for this Tuesday, the 11th of August. Now, if you missed any of the details there, if you want to listen back or play it back for someone else, it's on the podcast on our website from around about 11:30, and you can watch it back too on our social media and on Garda Shia Kana's social media a little later on today. And it's live, back for you again after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. It's on the issue of tax. I have a girl that got a summer job to put her through college and lost half of the Susie grant as a result. What a shame. Yep, it shouldn't happen, should it? That's discouraging her trying to help herself and take a bit of a burden, presumably too, off mum and dad. I totally agree with Michael Healy-Ray. I hate to work overtime because the only person to benefit is the taxman. It's about time someone thought about the workers, says another. It's like the only people who can live these days are the benefit people. Well, anyway, let's go to Michael. Michael, you were listening to Michael Healy-Ray, your namesake. Do you agree?
Definitely. Good.
Good morning. Right, so you're in the building trade. What do you see in terms of trying to get lads and lassies to work overtime?
Well, I'm in Glasgow. I'm a second-generation Gidorman, so I've spent 20-odd years on the building trade, currently self-employed. The big issue was that most people don't want to work overtime, let's face it. So when you're, and quite often the squeeze gets put on you to work overtime, you know, the job's coming towards an end and other guys are doing it, so you feel obliged. And then you get hit with driven into the higher tax bracket and you see the pay path and you thought, what was the point? So I've been arguing for a long time that if you're expected to work, which quite often you are expected, even though you're paid, if you're expected to work extra, why are you getting taxed at a higher rate? It should definitely be a lower rate. So the 10% would have been what I would have had in my head as well, because the standard tax here was 21% in Scotland.
Yeah, and it would get you, so it's all relative, isn't it? I don't think we're saying necessarily, though, it would be great to get rid of the highest rate of tax. It's just that if you are prepared to put in the extra time and contribute to the economy broadly and to the business community broadly, then it should be incentivised. The government's still getting your 20% in Ireland or your 10% in Scotland, so it's not like they're missing out. And it's arguably sometimes money that they wouldn't be getting if the person didn't do the overtime.
As Michael said, you would be more incentivised to work overtime if if the benefit was there in a financial remuneration, because let's face it, we don't go out to work for a laugh, do we?
No, no. Really what we do is to work and work and work to try and not work anymore.
Exactly, exactly.
All right. You've always lived in Scotland, Michael, have you?
I'm actually just back from Gador 2 weeks ago. I was in Derrybeg, Shaskenburg.
Very good.
I had my two boys, Otis and Leon, with me. So
Brilliant.
We're there every year. We're always back.
Excellent. Always great to have you home. Thanks, Michael. Look after yourself. I appreciate you taking the time. Appreciate
you. Can I say hello to my sister?
Oh, I insist.
Can I say hello to my sister?
Go on. What's her name?
Yes. Christine McCorkindale. And our next door neighbour, Evelyn Nicola.
All right. Christine and Evelyn, good morning to you from Scotland. Michael, lovely to chat to you, Michael. Look after yourself.
Good market.
Slán, Machine Way. Right, more on this, actually. It's kind of caught your attention a little bit. What about the lorry and bus drivers that can't do overtime? Well, you see, this is the problem, you see, one of the problems. But, you know, the way I would look at it is, you know, if it doesn't apply to me, but my neighbour gets to work more and have more money in their pocket, I can live with that, you know. So obviously there are those that are going to be just not even disadvantaged. It doesn't really affect you. It does affect you, but it doesn't affect you at the same time. Another caller says the main reason that a lot of people don't work overtime is they don't want it to affect their family income supplement. The government would be better looking into that. Well, why not both? These are two spaces that sort of sit in the same space, so to speak. For the love of God, now we're looking at the tax on overtime instead of looking at why is it required overtime to make a living. Were turkeys voting for Christmas? Yeah, but you never have enough money. I get where you're coming from, but you can never have enough money. And if it's not obligatory. I know sometimes in certain industries you feel like it is, but a caller says, my normal week's tax is €136, and when I work a bank holiday, which I get paid extra for, wait for this, my tax is €275, not worth it. So I take a holiday and take my tax down to 70. There you go. Can you imagine having a tax system where someone is better off taking a day's annual leave rather than working a bank holiday? You know, it's I know some employers will sort of give you a day in lieu. I'm not sure how that affects the tax side of things. This caller works in accounts, and I've spoken to employers that have worked, but employers won't work extra as they don't want it affecting their family income support. So that's another one. Like, I mean, if we can have a system, because there are strange things in the whole tax system. So say, for instance, you have a house and you want to rent out your house. You'll pay it, and say, for instance, you'll pay tax on the rent at your highest rate of tax. That's a whole house for a family of three or four. So people aren't doing it. So say, for instance, you were on the higher rate of tax and you rented it out for, what is it? I don't know what going rent is at the moment, luckily. So say it was 1,500. So you'd probably give the taxman 700 if you're on the highest rate of tax with a house. So why would you do that? Yet, at the same time, if you lived in that house and wanted to rent out a spare room to a student, for an example, you could earn 14 grand tax-free. How does that work? So, I mean, obviously it's fixing a student accommodation problem, but we're taxing arguably landlords with full houses out of it because they're going, look, why would I rent out this house and pay this? I know, and this is not popular because landlords get a bit of a, it's a dirty word almost, and it shouldn't be, but there are lots of strange things in the tax system, you know, that we could look at and say, right, well, that might well help housing, or, you know, that might help people to earn more money and keep more of their money. Do you know the politicians say, we're putting €1,000 back in your pocket? It's a phrase I cannot stand. And both the government and opposition use it. You know, put proper money back in people's back pocket or front pocket. You know, it seems to be catching a bit of interest from our listeners. They're agreeing with Independent Deputy Michael Healy-Ray. James O'Donnell is a Falcara photographer who's no stranger to many of you listening. Good morning to you, James. Thank you so
morning,
much
Greg.
For calling in.
Hi, thanks for the invite.
And it's an interesting one because you have had what's described as a near-death fireplace explosion. So
yeah.
How did this come about?
So basically, it was a Wednesday night, lit the fire about 9 o'clock and went to the kitchen to get a glass of water, and my dining room is my office, and I saw my little paper bin, looked kind of full, so I took it back into the fireplace and I tipped it in. Lay back on the sofa and was about to work on my photography and get some pictures ready for social media, and I saw a little strip of paper on the hearth. I thought, okay, I'll get up and throw it in. So when it was so close to the fire that the fire was roaring and very hot coals and everything, and I picked up the tongs, and as soon as I pinched the little piece of paper, the fireplace blew up.
Wow.
Absolutely blew up. And I have a very soft light in the living room, so it was like quite dark, and Frida, my dog, is sleeping on the floor, and I might have TV on, but it's, I like the dark kind of vibe anyway.
Yeah.
And the room lit up, and I roared with the shock. Hot coals were all literally blown out of the fire and covered the carpet, so I could see the carpet going on fire. I looked down at my hand, and my hand had a major trauma wound, and I thought, okay, it wasn't really panic, it was urgency. So I ran to the kitchen, washed my hand. I was losing too much blood, got the kitchen towel.
Must have been. So obviously something sat on your hand and seared into
it,
right?
Something hit quite violently.
Yeah.
Because without giving away too much details, when my hand swung back with the reflex, blood hit the wall in an arc.
Wowzers.
Back to the top of the curtains about 3 metres behind me. That was the violence of it all.
Yeah.
So what I believed then, and which I told all the medical teams, and I believed this for quite a long while, that it was a little plastic bottle, a little stubby bottle you might get your ginger shot or your turmeric and stuff. Mm. And I remember drinking that at my desk. But I don't remember anything after that, whether it fell into the paper bin, because on the other side I have my rubbish bin. And so I went to the hospital. Yeah, so it was a long story short.
So what happened inside the house? So, I mean, obviously at this point you've ran to the kitchen to dress that, to get some cold water and dress that wound, but you can't just focus on that because there's other stuff going on in the front room. So when you return to the front room, so obviously something within the fire exploded and threw the fire outward. Mm-hmm. So what scene met you then?
Hot coals on the carpet. I could see the singeing and the smoke coming up. And I tried my best then to get the major coals off back into the fire. And I realised then I was kind of losing a bit of energy. And also I knew I had to make phone calls to get help. So I ran back into my desk and I rang my brother Joseph. And I said, Joe, I've blown the top of my hand off. Get down now, just to create that urgency with him. And then I rang my friend Brenda Hewitt. She knows Frida and I wanted her to look after Frida. So I was kind of arranging everything as well. And then my brother Joseph arrived really quickly. And he went in, cleared up the coals. Siobhan rang the ambulance, and then I could feel myself losing consciousness. I felt I was going to be sick. I was losing my vision, became very pale, but I came back around again, and the ambulance arrived within 30 minutes of the call, which was pretty impressive. And they got me to Letterkenny about 11:30. And from Letterkenny, I was transferred overnight by my sister. She had to come in about 4 o'clock and drive me down to Galway for 7:30. To be on the list for the plastic surgeons and to prioritise who needed the space.
Yeah, so I would imagine ordinarily this sounds like a skin graft situation.
There was a lot of conversation around skin graft, flap graft, even a sponge going into the hole, and also even synthetic skin out of the lab. And that kind of intrigued me a little bit. But thankfully, when the team saw the wound, they were able to work with it and stitch it all back together.
Yeah.
I did send your researcher some of the photos.
I'm not going to.
No, of course not. No.
Caroline wanted me to have a look at them to make sure if they were okay for viewers. And I'm going, I don't know. I don't think I'm going
to
open them.
But I wanted you to see then, obviously, from
I will have a look.
From the 2 months of the amazing work by the surgeons in Galway.
But I look at the top of my hand and there seems to be loads of moving parts, like, is it tendons and muscles that pull the fingers
and
your grip and all? So I'm imagining that was seared into. Did anything there need to be reattached or...?
Thankfully, there's no flesh to work with. My tendons were exposed. I could see more or less into my hand.
Unbelievable.
And it is quite gruesome, but... there's a thing called, and let me get this right, epithelialization.
Mm.
It's where when they can't recover enough skin to cover the wound, I actually form my own new skin over that. And that was incredible. Really intriguing how it all worked out.
There's a bit of loose skin here at the top of the hand too, I wonder.
Yeah,
so they, to some extent. But...
Exactly, they pulled that across as much as they could.
Yeah.
So my hand is very tight and I only had about 30% of use when I came out from after about 2 weeks. And that kind of worried me a little bit. But incredibly, the hand has come back now to pretty much... 100% with a bit of stiffness. But the reveal this morning is that about a week later, I spotted something on the mantelpiece. It was a small cartridge. It was flattened. It was almost like the size of a shotgun cartridge.
Yes.
I just didn't know what it was. I sat down and the penny dropped. It wasn't a plastic bottle. It was actually a fully loaded asthma inhaler.
Wow.
That somehow knocked off my desk into the paper bin that I wasn't aware of. And I just thought, I'm just putting some bits of piece of paper in the fire. It went off like a grenade.
Right, so that's the little canister then. So obviously
fully loaded
the plastic
with gas.
But still, it doesn't seem to be of the size that... I mean, obviously, it clearly is, but it just goes to show, doesn't it? You wouldn't think that that would create the explosive energy to do what it did.
Absolutely. I believe also it was quite new, so it was fully loaded with this pressurised gas. And I think then the casing must have flown out and hit my hand. I'm very lucky because if it came out at a slightly different angle, it could have gone in through my neck.
I'm thinking eyes and everything as well.
Or even my neck room. Yeah, that would exactly. Be the
catastrophic.
Worst.
And you were also dealing with the passing of your dad. And your dad wasn't long buried either, which obviously is going to add to the stress and shock and all that kind of stuff. You know, because even if someone's a little older and your dad lived to a ripe 93...
It'd be 93 tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. it still doesn't take away from the loss. And I must mention as well, too, that your world famous dog Iggy was dead just 6 months.
Just about end of November.
Just wonder, would Iggy have been located in front of the fire, or is there any saving grace there, or anything? I wonder.
There is obviously, and Frida happened to be lying out of the way because the blast kind of came out at an angle. I caught most of it, but Frida was okay. That was the main thing as well. She was injury free, but she was shocked. So when I was put into the ambulance, my friend Brenda Hewitt, she arrived to take Frida away. And poor Frida burst out the back door, ran around the house, across the lawn, and straight in one jump into the ambulance.
Oh, wow.
Just to be beside me. She was terrified, And we managed to get her to leave. And you might see a photograph of me smiling because I wanted Frida to see that I'm okay, kind of.
You have a real connection with your animals, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Iggy has been really powerful in my life. She landed in 2011, pretty much turned my life around. And we just took this journey where it went way beyond more than I could ever imagine. And she's impacted lives all over the world, and it's incredible. So she's very much missed, but she has left a legacy that has to continue through Frida and the next pup eventually. Maybe
and of course, you know, that's down to Frida and the look, Iggy and the look and the personality, but it's also down to your skills as a photographer. And I have a calendar for next year here as well, in memory of Iggy, who looks like they're just about to enjoy a little thing that looks like Guinness, right? So talk to me about this calendar, if you don't mind, just whilst you're in.
Yeah, well, thanks, because this is Iggy's memorial calendar. It's our eighth edition since we started out in 2020, so that's the calendar for 2027. And it goes around the world, unbelievably, and even for a few years in a row, it went to every continent, including Antarctica, where my friend Corinthian used to work, and it went to the Arctic Circle, where Kim Sharkey worked, and that's the Chatneil Wanish in Flacara.
Is they Hannah hats, are they?
I think so.
Okay, go ahead.
But we love old Ireland, so you'll see in the photographs, and that's an incredible photograph there with the Kelvin Helmand.
It is the camera. The cloud formation there is remarkable.
That's a very rare phenomenon. The Kelvin Helmholtz clouds. Yeah,
they're like waves over the sea.
That's what I googled on my phone. Yeah. I hadn't a clue. I just googled wavy clouds, and it turned out to be that. So we're actually planning now. So I took Iggy to France.
Sorry, I'm not distracted. Yep. I'm just looking through it whilst you talk.
Of course, enjoy. I took Iggy to France last year to live out the last 2 months of her life. It was planned.
One's errand. That was your...
Sorry?
One's errand. You did it for that reason?
Yeah, absolutely. Well. Yeah, majorly because of that.
That's beautiful there too.
Yeah. That's chat Mickey McGowan over by Maroti.
You can see why it has such international appeal, especially for people who are Irish.
Absolutely, the ancestry is there, a sense of that, yeah. So I'm currently planning to go back to France for Iggy's first anniversary for myself, but also for Iggy's fans who are still going through the grief of her loss.
Yeah.
And we have arranged that now. So,
okay, very good. There's another cracker there in the Shamrock Lodge.
In Fulgara.
Yeah. All right, beautiful stuff. Where can people get this
Online, so online is James.
I know you have a expectant audience anyway, right? Yeah. But it's just in case people are...
Absolutely, absolutely. If you go on to jamesandiggy.com, you'll see the calendars for sale there as well, and we ship worldwide.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And I suppose that the parting message, James, is that, you know, when you talk of how that little canister of inhaler gas ended up in your bucket, lots of people have a bucket next to the fire or wherever it might be, and you're not always checking because sometimes a wrapper goes in on top of what have you.
Of course,
but it could be a lighter that light. It's probably more likely going to be something like a lighter that you've just lit the fire with that finds itself into the bucket.
Yeah.
You know,
and
it might not be under the same. It might not be under the same pressure as an inhaler, but still,
it carries a risk. Oh,
it carries a risk. Yeah. Okay, and you're good. What about? I mean, are you left-handed? Your trigger fingers working.
Yes, dominant hand is right-handed, thankfully. Yeah, but also it's like a reset button. You make you kind of rethink things and where your life is when this has come so close to being more catastrophic.
Mm.
So I take that kind of silver lining from that.
Yeah,
and also I'd love to show you this. painting that was done. Yeah. If I can give it to you.
And who's responsible for this?
Lynn Longman, who was very moved by Iggy's death, and she also has lost dogs as well. And she'd done this to support me with my own loss.
I actually presumed that was a photo looking absolutely, at it upside down.
It's
like
so good.
It is photorealistic.
Yeah, it's almost.
But at the same time, at the same time, you can see the nuances of a painting in it.
Yes, yeah, it's pastels. But she's got her eyes perfectly, incredibly beautiful, and I'll be taking that back to France.
And that's important because you would see the personality.
Yeah.
You would see the personality of Iggy.
Oh yes.
And for someone to capture that mm-hmm. with their hand. Mm-hmm. And you understand how difficult that can be yeah. with a photograph.
Yeah.
But to be able to do that with one's hand is a truly remarkable skill.
It's incredible. I was on my way to meet Lynn down at Hollymount beside Claire Morris, South Mayo. And I wasn't sure if she was a beginner painter or professional. I had no idea what photograph she used. And when she revealed it, I was stunned. I was left okay. speechless and quite emotional too, to be honest.
Brilliant. We must talk again in a longer yeah. format, if that's okay, James.
That'd be great.
That's Falcara photographer James O'Donnell. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.